broadcasting live from the Valley of the Sun, Phoenix, Arizona, in the heart of the great American Southwest. It's Erskine Overnight. Now, here's Erskine.
We're in for a treat tonight. Vivian Gaspar, over the last 20 years, founded and owned several businesses. She's been a keynote speaker on financial topics for corporations, service clubs, and the New Jersey Department of Labor. She's helped over 200 families with loan modification, saving many from foreclosure. And we're going to talk about why you want to save yourself from foreclosure and not go there. And the book, she has all of these places where she saved people thousands of dollars, in many cases cut their mortgage payments in half. How to Survive Your Financial Crisis is the book. It can help you, help us, avoid financial problems, not only after they occur, but before they happen. It's a book telling you, basically, economically, how to survive in the world today. It's not just a financial crisis. It's how to survive today. It's a survival guide. And she's called in experts in every field, 28 different experts. I mean, this is incredible. It's smart to prepare. 28 different experts she's called in this book, and each one has their own area of expertise. 5 chapters just on if you're unemployed, 15 chapters on small business. And she starts off with ID theft. It's over 300 pages, and it's easy to read. That's what I liked about it. Vivian Gaspar, welcome to Erskine Overnight.
Oh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Your book is easy to read. I love the way you start out. Your first chapter, you hit it running, ID theft. And I think Bank of America did us all a great favor when they went up to $5 charge on debit cards, because basically, I never have used them. You've got 30 days to question something on your credit card. You've got 72 hours to question a transaction on a debit card. It's really bad news, these debit cards, aren't they?
Well, actually, it's worse than that in some of the more local banks. Where I am, they actually are instituting a bank fee where I bank, called TD Bank. And for every transaction, including withdrawals and online banking bill pays, ready for this? They want $9 per transaction. Think about that for a second. If you're set up to pay 10 bills a month, think about that. That's insane. So, yes, there is
absolutely
the bank's getting
insane.
Very bad.
Now, for your credit cards, now this is really smart. I hadn't thought about this. This is what I like about your book, How to Survive Your Financial Crisis. Because every time I'm looking through this and, oh, yeah, I'm pretty sharp. I pretty much know this. We'll have a great interview, though, and bring up some things. I didn't know that it's great to have a UPS store or a FedEx store use their mailbox. In other words, rent a mailbox, use that for your credit card bills. And the reason you want to do that is so people won't have your home address and all that everything else involved in that. For security on ID theft, you can use a post office box. It's a lot safer, isn't it?
Right, and you don't even have to use an actual post office P.O. box, because then it actually says P.O. box. What I do is use a UPS store address, because it's a physical street address with a suite number. And, it's a lot safer, because nowadays with reverse lookups and so many businesses and stores are having, like, those frequent buyers memberships, and they you go up
right
to pay at the register, and they ask you for your phone number. If someone overhears that, if they just go to a computer and do a reverse lookup and you get your phone bill at home, they now know where you live. And that, talk about easy access for stalkers. It's a security issue.
Oh, the whole thing.
It's not just an identity theft issue.
It's a safety issue. And you also talk about get a rider on your homeowner or renter's insurance for identity theft. I didn't even know they were available.
Oh, yes, definitely. See, this is where it brings out all that little-known information to help people in everyday life.
The other thing is, if you've got $10,000 owing on your credit card, you've got 19% APR, which is about standard, I think, it would take you 58 years to pay it off with your minimum payment every month and cost you $29,000 in interest. That's 4 times, in other words, $10,000 is going to cost you $39,000 to pay off, and it's going to take 58 years if you pay the minimum amount. That really shows you how bad it is, doesn't it?
Right. As a matter of fact, I always like to say people forget because it's so common in use. But I, really, if you think about it, the interest charged on mortgages is literally double that when you originally take out, but that's in the hundreds of thousands sometimes. But when you're talking about credit cards, look at that. You're talking 25%, 20%, sometimes even 30%. Isn't that legalized loan sharking? Well, if they not, they don't let you go to the corner guy named Guido, why are you supposed to do it with banks? I don't understand that, do you?
It seems to me like Guido did a whole lot better job of it than some of these banks when they do the amount of money. They, at least Guido says, pay me back in 60 days or, you know, we'll take care of some things. You may have some trouble writing. But the fact of the matter is, when he says 60 days, that's a whole lot better than, oh, we'll spread it out for 58 years. I mean, come on. That's absolute highway robbery, isn't it?
Well, that's the problem, is that people got so used to it that they just accept it and they just continue to live in the thought process of spend now and don't even worry about tomorrow. And then when tomorrow comes, like, this is where we have this tremendously big dip in the economy, is because tomorrow is now today and we're all paying for it.
The other thing is, be careful on the internet, because if it doesn't have a secure site to go to, you're in trouble.
Right. I mean, that's the easy way. Luckily, the only positive I could say about identity theft is it has minimized people actually breaking into your home and doing that sort of thing, so you're a little safer. But the identity theft is so common, you really have to be diligent in protecting yourself, or you could find yourself owing, you don't know who, tens of thousands of dollars or more, and it's not just for money. So for the people who say that I don't have good credit, I don't have a lot of money, I'm safe, well, do you have health insurance? Sometimes people are stealing your identity to get access to your health insurance because they might have a major disease, you know, cancer, AIDS, who knows, whatever kind of disease. They don't have health insurance. They need the hospital coverage or what have you, the medical assistance. They're going to take your identity to get access to your medical, and you won't even realize it for who knows how long.
Until you get something in the mail saying we just replaced this, that, or the other, your heart valve or something, and then you're going to go, excuse me, I don't think so. Now, talking about health insurance, it's a very logical thing to go into. If you're recently unemployed, they have what's called COBRA, and you cannot be uninsured for longer than 3 months or a pre-existing condition isn't covered. It's got all sorts of things to it. I found that COBRA was extraordinarily expensive in many cases to get. A lot of times you just have to go to a private insurer because despite pre-existing, despite what they say, the cost of it can be extraordinarily high. Comments on that, please.
Oh, definitely. You know, they did make some regulation to make COBRA more effective and, you know, easier to get and cheaper. However, these regulations are changing so fast, you really need to stay on top of it and see where does it stand right now. Because at one point they made it down to 35%, which has made it a lot less expensive, and that could have expired. I mean, you really have to keep on top of it. COBRA can be the biggest evil, but then they're trying to help with that. And the problem is right now election year's coming up, and politics is really taking center stage instead of these really important issues. For example,
you've lost your job, you've lost your health insurance, they've got this COBRA, they have to take you, but you have no money coming in, and it's triple the price of what even they were paying before. There's no way you can afford it. This is an evil thing, but you talk about it in your book, which is called How to Survive Your Financial Crisis. We'll be right back with Vivian Gaspar. How to Survive Your Financial Crisis. That's also her website, www.howtosurviveyourfinancialcrisis. You've got a lot of things. Matter of fact, you have like 15 chapters for people who are unemployed. No, 5 chapters on that. And when you're looking at that, one of the suggestions one person makes is about multi-level marketing. I think you've got to be very, very careful if you're signing up on a multi-level marketing program. Some of those, you know, they're really take advantage. There are a lot of programs that take advantage of people who are unemployed, and you end up with a garage full of stuff if you're not careful, can't you?
Well, that's why I actually invited this lady to write a chapter on it, because it's important. because there's so many different types of companies who are involved in multi-level marketing. That's why I wanted this chapter covered, to demystify and understand what the pros, cons, and is it really an evil or an opportunity?
It can be either one. It depends on who you go with and what you're doing. And if it's something you enjoy, then enjoy it. But, you know, the results that are obtained by some doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be obtained by everybody on any
level. Right, that's why I have the chapter, so we understand how it operates and the details that therein.
Now, if you're going to be a business owner, there are things you need to look into. It isn't cheap. You got to get property insurance. And I love this chapter that this gentleman wrote, Terrence Coughlin. Property insurance, commercial liability insurance, commercial auto insurance, commercial auto. You got to think about that. Sometimes workman's comp, even if you don't have employees, you may have to purchase that. And umbrella policy. An umbrella policy is a good thing to have anyway. You can purchase those for relatively little expense. And that can actually help you quite a bit. That's a good way to go, isn't it?
Right. And that's why, unfortunately, if you don't watch your insurance expenses extremely carefully with a professional that you trust, it can actually cost your business. The reason I have 15 chapters for self-employed people is I've owned several businesses, and I wanted to catch and educate on the possible pitfalls that could end up costing your business with one mistake.
Now, I'll tell you what I do, and you tell me if I'm right about doing this. I have an independent agent, not one who's captive by one company, but an independent agent. And Bob, actually, he'll steer me into the right thing. He'll call me up. He'll say, hey, you know, this is something I think you need. He doesn't overinsure. He doesn't underinsure. He gives you what you need. I found independent agents, it may cost a little bit more sometimes, but generally it doesn't. But they'll put you in where you need to be, and they take better care of you than a captive agent in many occasions. A captive agent is somebody like only sells State Farm, only sells Allstate, only sells one of these. And I think that your independent agent, generally, is your better agent.
I completely agree with that. I definitely think people should always go to independent agents, because if something happens where you're less insurable, or something goes on, they're not going to bring to you the points and the negatives of the insurance company that you're with. If you only pigeonholed into, like you said, as an example, Allstate, if there's a negative situation that arises, but if they're an independent and they have other companies that they have the option to place you with, then they're going to be a lot more forthcoming with information that is important to your business and how you're operating.
Yeah, you got to know where to go, because they've only got one product they're selling. And they're certainly not going to say, you know, this other company may be better for you. But independent agents able to pick and choose and show you the best policy. Now, I know we may have people who work for Allstate, and I'm sure they do a wonderful job, and State Farm and a lot of these. But for most small business owners and most people, your independent agent is generally the way to go, because They're not beholden to any one company. I'm glad that you agree with me on that one, because that, I think, is a very important thing, especially if you're in business yourself.
I definitely agree with that statement.
Now, the other thing that you have, and I found this chapter to be remarkable, Ronald Hatcher, who wrote this chapter, he hadn't got a bunch of letters next to his name or anything, but he knows what he's talking about when it comes to marketing your product. And ways that you can do it on the cheap. It doesn't mean that it's going to look cheap, but on the cheap. Like you say, you don't want to do things cheap. You don't want to go to one of these internet printing companies. You go to somebody locally who can do your printing for you, because it's important to look good. You know, you go out, hopefully if you're going out, you've got your suit nice, you've got your shoes nice, and you hand them a card that looks like it came off of some little kid's printing press. That doesn't go well. It looks like something that you just copied on your printer and is just absolute garbage. That doesn't go well. You really should have professional printing, and that's something that you talk about. But otherwise, what he talks about is, and you call it practical marketing for every business budget. And I love that chapter. You talk about everything from radio to TV. And lots of ways that you can do it. Television, especially, if you're not going to advertise on some absolute, you're not going to do the Super Bowl, But you can get some shows that a lot of people have. If you're selling mattresses, you do a late night show, and they'll sell your block very, very cheap. Radio, the same thing. There are lots of ways to do it on radio. Lots of things you can do with that. Internet, you say, has really hurt the printing business. But you've got lots and lots of ways to advertise, aren't there?
Yes, and as a matter of fact, for the one of the things that I do is I work with an attorney as a partner for mortgage modification, as you mentioned earlier in my bio. And one of the things that's really important to note is I did at one point and early on do some radio advertising, and for the mortgage modification, and we had some phenomenal success with that. We're in the New York area, and you'd be shocked as to how efficient it was and cost-effective to place ads on major radio New York stations.
Yeah, you may have 60 radio stations, but when people listen to the radio, they actually care, and they're into it. And radio is a hot medium as opposed to TV. A lot of times people go to the bathroom while the commercials come on TV. Generally on radio, they're driving in their cars, or if they're sitting at home, they're listening to it in the background. They're not going to the bathroom when the commercials come on. May go to the bathroom during the show, but they don't go necessarily when the commercials come on. And they're there, and they're generally in positions where what they hear on the radio, if they remember, or they'll write down. So it's a very good medium. It's a hot medium. Print media, I was talking with Adrian Craig earlier, and Adrian lives in Florida, and he said there are hardly any want ads anymore. The print media having a lot of problems with newspapers. I'm not sure that most small businesses can do a lot with the print media right now. But you've got so much more. You've got the Internet, which is huge. But just putting up a good website or something doesn't mean anything. Internet's pretty confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, you really have to know how are you going to direct people to your website. What are you doing? Just because you have a fabulous website address, well, so do a million other people. How do you drive the traffic there, and then how do you actually get people to take action once they are at your website? That's what is important to think about.
You talk about that in the book, and the book is called How to Survive Your Financial Crisis, which is also your website, www.howtosurviveyourfinancialcrisis.com. Talking with Vivian Gaspar, and she'll be right back. There was one chapter that really stuck out, because this could be the downfall of a business. Very simply, in your book, How to Survive Your Financial Crisis, that's cash flow tips. I mean, Vito wrote an amazing story on how to bring the cash in, how to collect, how to make sure that the people pay. And that's the downfall of a lot of businesses. Oh, business is going great, but My monies that are sitting out there, that's money that you need. That's money that you need to operate on. That's money you need to buy inventory. And if you've got it sitting out to where you can't collect it, you've got a problem. That's a major thing with business, isn't it?
Right. If you have your income and your revenue tied up in accounts receivable, that's going to hurt you. As a matter of fact, a lot of the business owners that I work with mortgage modification, their biggest complaint is that their customers can't afford to pay them and their accounts receivables have gone to 90 and 120 days. So I think is fabulous about Vito's chapter, who had wrote that you're mentioning about the how to make collections easier and your cash flow, is simply he's giving you the tips right then and there, things that you can do and the slight nuances that actually make your cash flow come in a lot better and more effectively. And instead of having a money out there 90 and 120 days, it gets it back to something more normal, 15 to 30 to maybe even 25 days. Makes a difference in the life of your business.
Vito even has ways to talk with people, which I think is absolutely terrific. He said, don't ask how much can you pay, don't ask when you can pay, and don't ask can you pay something. They put the conversation in the hands of the person who owes the money. He tells you what to say and how to say it. I like that, because I like somebody giving me ideas of what to say and how to say it. And Vito just lays it out there. He's good, isn't he?
Absolutely. And what is really good is to remember that all these chapters, including Vito's, use contact information for every single one of those authors. So if you want to ask Vito, this is great information, tell me more, you can pick up the phone and call him and reach out to every single one of those authors for additional help. That's really, I think, very key to remember.
Let's get on to what you're big on, Vivian Gaspar, and that is with the foreclosures and loan modification. I've heard horror stories about loan modifications. The banks string you out and string you out and string you out. And then I've heard other stories where apparently they have helped some people. What do you do if the bank keeps stringing you along until you go into foreclosure? I've heard stories like that. I'm not talking out of school on that. And I've got a follow-up question. Go ahead.
Sure, of course. The one thing people need to remember is that you're actually asking the mortgage company that you agreed to pay in a certain dollar amount when you signed those documents. And now you're saying, Mr. Lender, whoever it is, and we're talking, by the way, when we say lenders and banks, I'm talking about the big boys usually. You know, the Chase and Wells Fargo and Bank of America and Citi and those very large lenders that hold about 70% of all the mortgages in the United States. That's what's really
important.
Yeah,
the big six, right.
Right, the big ones.
Right.
And you know why? Because it's what they're not talking about in the media that gets me so angry is that these banks are out of compliance with federal guidelines to such an extent, and they're ignoring the law, that if they were an individual, they would have been arrested. And you just cannot arrest the banking institution. You just can't do that, right? So it's really
then
sad.
My thinking is, let's take the president of the bank and arrest him and let that be an example, huh?
But they're not going to do it. Think about lobbyists. So the point is to understand the relationship. And the fact is, in order to get it done and to get it done properly, because they don't really want to give modifications. Think about this for a second. They'd rather tell people horrible things, which I've sat in people's homes, where one of the big six, I'm not going to name which specific one, but one of the big six, told this family, specifically, we don't care how you get the money to catch up with your arrears, go liquidate your 401k. Really. That is what somebody working at one of the big six said to my client. Think about this for a very careful second. It might seem like a good idea, but who would you rather owe money to? Your mortgage company or the IRS? Because this is one of the most horrendous things I've ever seen the big six do. When you liquidate, let's say $50,000 or $100,000, your 401k, you're in your 50s, your husband, your wife, and we're talking your combined retirement assets, you know,
you're liquidating your future. That's your future you're liquidating. Not where you are today, but where you're going to be. Right.
Right, but it's more than that. When you liquidate retirement assets, that is taxable income as if you earned it. And now the IRS is going to tax you on it. So think about it. What if you earned $50,000 for as a household in 2011? And in 2011, you liquidate a total of $100,000 in retirement funds because you're desperate to catch up with your mortgage? And not lose your home. Now the IRS will tax you as if you earned $150,000. For the average family, that's putting you in debt to the IRS of about $30,000 to $50,000. But
good
guess
Lord.
What? The person working at the mortgage company doesn't care. They just want the money that you originally promised to pay them. And you're wondering why it takes so long to modify? Think about this. You ask them to hire people to get them less money. Does that even make sense when you say it out loud? Think about this. You own a company, and you're being told to give people a break and make the mortgage, the payment of whatever they owe you less, so now you actually have to hire people to process those applications. So there's reasons that they're not cooperative. And you're going to think that, well, they don't want all of the foreclosures to happen. Did you know that there are even government subsidies to these mortgage companies for each foreclosure? So their losses are being offset because the U.S. government cares how those banks are perceived to the foreign investors, by the Arabs and the Chinese that have billions of dollars in American banks. Think about this for a very careful second. So when you're thinking that the bank is not cooperating, and why aren't they? There's solid reasons why. And there's also things that the banks aren't telling you that you do have within your power. For example, if you're denied for a mortgage modification, find out how to improve your situation. Like, what is it you did wrong? You may have done nothing wrong. Did you know you can go back and have an approval turned out from a denial? Denials are not final. And more importantly, if you did get approved a year ago and you think that's it, you're done, you can't get more help, wrong. You can go back in even after a year and have a modification redone if you need to. What if they didn't give you a good deal last year? And it's been more than 12 months. go in and reapply and push. Do not accept no. And the biggest, absolute biggest, saddest thing that is not in the media, instead you have all the scandals that aren't helping people. Let's get the news that does help people on a day-to-day basis. The biggest, number one thing your listeners need to know is that the federal modification program under Making Home Affordable, the HAMP, is expiring in December 2012, in 13 months. And the problem is, in order to get a mortgage modification finally approved, takes between 8 months to a year. Let's look at the timeline. You're running out of time.
Oh, wow.
That's why
Eight months to a year to get a modification approved. Most people haven't got 8 months to a year.
But that's where it is in finality, because you must have a trial payment approved first, and the trial payments are between 3 to 5 months. And in order to have the final modification signed off on, you must prove that you can afford to make those trial period payments. So then you must get through that 5 month payment period, and then they sign you off on a final, which lasts 5 to 8 years.
More when we get back. This is incredible. Incredible. Talking with Vivian Gaspar. The book is called How to Survive Your Financial Crisis, and her website's howtosurviveyourfinancialcrisis.com. That was very good, making the website same title as the book. Now, you say there are ways to stop a foreclosure today. There are three ways that basically these lenders don't want you to know about, the banks don't want you to know about. How can you stop a foreclosure? And second part of the question is, let's go this one first. If you're underwater, meaning you owe more than your mortgage is for, say your mortgage is for $600,000 and the house is only worth $400,000, why does it make any sense at all to keep paying on something that it's going to take you 10 years just to catch up to where it comes up to the value? Does it make any sense?
Well, first of all, it might not. You do have to look at it as an individual situation in your life. However, that being said, that there are new government regulations that just either got signed into place or are being signed into play, which help people with that underwater amount. Like in the situation you just gave, it was $200,000. But here's something else very, very important. Some mortgage modification, if you can get approved, and we've been very successful in getting this for our clients, is actually getting principal balance reductions. So in your example, you owe $600,000, your house is worth $400,000 in value. We've actually gotten people where they got the mortgage modification, and for each year that they paid on time, and this one particular gentleman in my mind, he's going to have, ready for this, $72,000 a year principal balance reduction in addition to the modified payment, which was lowered $900 a month for 5 years. And for each year he made that payment on time, they're going to lower it by $72,000 a year for 3 years. Well, I'll do the math. That's a little over $210,000. In addition to the mortgage modification payment being lowered by $900 a month for 5 years. That is a proper modification. And that is
what that'll bring him in line with where, that'll bring him in line with where it should actually be for right now.
Right, and in his case, I remember distinctly, because I was just so happy we got that accomplished, that he actually ended up owing about $550,000 on a house worth about $350,000. So it was pretty similar to what you're saying, just down decrease it by $100,000 in each end. Okay, I would like to talk about the foreclosure. First of all, if you cannot modify and you find yourself in a situation that you do not earn enough income to fall into the window that you need to meet for mortgage modification, because there is a specific window. You can't make too little and you can't make too much. It's a very specific formula. If you find that you just don't make enough, because unfortunately, unemployment income does not count towards the qualifying income window that you need to have for mortgage modification. So if you find that you're actually facing foreclosure, a couple things. Number one, if you can sell, do it. And it doesn't matter for how much. If you can make a profit, so to speak, if you actually owe less than the house is valued at, terrific. If you can't, and it's a short sale, which is what you said, where you owe more than the house is valued at, You need to ask the bank to accept the difference. However, this is really important to note. As of January 1st, 2012, for short sale losses that the bank will accept, for example, going back to the person you mentioned, they owe $600,000 and it's worth $400,000. Well, that's $200,000 you're asking the mortgage company to forgive, correct? You know, with a short sale approval.
Right.
Well, did you know that starting January 1st, 2012, in less than 60 days, they are going to be able to 1099 you for the difference, so you're going to be held liable to the IRS for that dollar amount.
Wow. Boy, that's piling on. That's piling on. You're losing money and everything else anyway, and then they pile on the taxes on top of that. Boy, kick a person when they're down, don't they?
Now, that's why it's not in the news. Explain to me why that sort of thing is not on a headline in the news instead of all these scandals. That's what I would like to know.
Boy.
In addition,
how do you stop a foreclosure? Let's go into some ways.
Okay,
that you
so real quick for the foreclosure. So that's the first thing I was saying: is sell it if you can. Number two, ask the bank for a forbearance to buy yourself some time. And number three, forbearance is basically where the bank's agreeing to put a hold on your payments for a while. And you don't know, maybe your circumstances can change, and putting those hold on it, if you can't modify, might buy you enough time to help yourself recover. Speak to an attorney in your area about the possibility of a deed in lieu of foreclosure. And last but not least, if you actually are foreclosed upon, remember three things. Number one, it is a court process. Speak to a third party that has nothing to do with any financial benefit, which is your county court and your county sheriff's department, who actually enforces that with a sheriff's sale, which is the enforced action of a foreclosure. And you're going to ask them, can you put any stays on it? Can you postpone it? And they usually can postpone it usually 2 to 3 times. And what's really important is, look, if you can't afford to live in your house and pay any payment, well, then if you have to leave because of a foreclosure, you're going to at least have to live maybe in an apartment or a rental of some kind, right? So you want to buy yourself enough time to save up some money to be able to pay rent someplace. You can't be homeless. We're going to prevent the possibility, but really important.
We're going to talk about foreclosure versus short sale with Vivian Gaspar. Talking with Vivian Gaspar, we've only got about 4 or 5 minutes, so I want to go through this very quickly. You're better off going through a short sale or even a bankruptcy as compared to a foreclosure. Like I was reading that foreclosure stays with you like forever. Am I correct in saying that?
No. Though, unfortunately, I'd like to take a step back. Foreclosure is not forever. If you're foreclosed upon, obviously it's going to go into your credit report, but you could still get a mortgage depending upon what happens in the future, obviously, because it will stay there for 7 to 10 years. But most importantly, you can get another mortgage after about 3 to 5 years of a foreclosure. It's not the end of the world. Similarly, like a bankruptcy, people have a horrible stigma of bankruptcy. It's similar to that. It's very misunderstood regarding credit. But I'd like to mention a couple more points, since we're running out of time, for foreclosure that's really key for people to save their lives and their financial families. Cash for keys is extremely important to note. If you will be foreclosed upon, this is something people need to know. Your mortgage company will give you thousands of dollars to not destroy your house as you're forced to leave it. You understand that? That's
right.
Cash for keys.
Three to five thousand is the general amount, right?
Right, but most people don't know that. And, of course, they're not going to volunteer to give it to you, usually. You need to know to ask for it. But think about it. Why would you throw away that opportunity? You have to leave your house. And what they're basically saying is, to stop you from destroying the property because you're so upset, they're handing you 3 to 5, and sometimes, depending upon the value of the home, even more. I've seen someone get $12,000 because it's a high-end home. Think about how far they can go in rent when you need to rent someplace afterwards. And the other thing that I think more people need to know about that is amazing, and we've brokered that for people negotiating with their lender, is, ready for this? After you're foreclosed, you can negotiate, because the bank normally will buy back from themselves at the sheriff's sale. So they will end up owning the home and selling it on the open market through a realtor themselves. Ask them if instead of the house being vacant, especially with the winter here coming, if you could rent the house back from the lender that they just foreclosed upon you. And it happens.
Right.
They don't want all these empty houses. They know you have the lingering feeling of pride that they will actually rent it to you as a tenant on the house that they just foreclosed you upon, that foreclosed upon you.
One quick question before we go. On short sales, every now I bid on three or four houses on short sale, the same amount that was required. It took the bank so long to get back that I said, the heck with it. We're talking six weeks or more. What is it? Do these banks not really care?
Well, they just to think about the size of the banks. It's not that they don't care, but again, you're asking them to take losses. So it's not in their best interest, especially when the law taking effect in January 2012, less than 60 days from now, is right around the corner. If they waited out till then they could 1099 you for that difference. Why on earth would they give it to you before then? It doesn't make sense to them.
No, I'm saying, if you're buying it, they're not going to, 1099 the person who's selling it.
Right.
Okay, the book is called How to Survive Your Financial Crisis, and the website's How to Survive Your Financial Crisis. This is one you want to know before you get into a financial crisis. Vivian Gaspar, you got to come back. Thank you for being on. We got lots more to ask you. Thank you so much for being on Erskine Overnight.
Thank you very much. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Sweet dreams. Catch you next week on Erskine Overnight. And go to www.erskineonradio.com. Most of the programs are up there. If you missed anything, erskineonradio.com is up there. You can download them. Until next week, sweet dreams.